This podcast is for entertainment purposes only and does not replace your own financial, tax, legal, or financial product advice.
Hello, Emily. How are you? And hello, Australia and everywhere else in the world.
We've got a few overseas listeners, actually, so shout out to you guys. Now, today I am excited for this episode because, John, you and I do this podcast. We look at each other across a screen and we see all these little numbers of people who are our listeners, and we love our listeners, but we don't often get to see our listeners. And today we're actually doing an episode with some community members of ours, Daniel and Shay, and they've jumped on because they're property investors, number one, they're listeners, number two, and number three, they've actually gone ahead and used your property calculator, which I think is awesome, a great resource that we will put in the show notes. But welcome to the show, Daniel and Shay.
Hey guys.
Hey John.
The thing that excites me about this, Emily, is they started listening 3 years ago. Now, I had to think, well, have we been running 3 years? And I know you joined us in the last 12 months. You just celebrated the anniversary, didn't you? But like, yes, like a long time, 3 years. And out of Shay's mouth came the words, the property and My Millennial Money podcast changed my life. Is that right, Shay?
It's actually true, certainly in a financial sense.
Very good. All right, so tell us about your journey. What do you both do for work? Where do you live? And where was your first step into property?
Yeah, so I'm a business development manager in renewable energy for Iberdrola, so shout out to them. And my first start into property was with my family home with my mother. Yeah. So, got involved in that, and also had an uncle that was quite active in property investing. So I always sort of looked at that from afar and thought he lived a pretty cool life, and thought, that's something I want to follow in the future.
Awesome. So you had a mentor there, which is great and always important. Did you do a joint venture with your mother, or were you just on the title, or how did that all work?
Yeah, so JV with mum, so went into that for some circumstances to sort of help and assist there. But it was a really good entry into the property market.
Awesome. Okay. And what about you, Shay?
So I'm an exercise physiologist and I work in a private hospital in the southeast suburbs of Melbourne. And I suppose my first, experience with property was when we bought our little unit in Bomb Beach to live in and renovate, and that was in 2017. So that was when I first got a taste for it.
Take us back to 2017 when you did both buy together, because I think it's an interesting thing buying property together, you know, and what people want often, and John will probably feel the same, that often there's competing interests of what someone wants, location versus the house size versus non-negotiables. How did you navigate getting into your first property together?
Yeah, it was an interesting one actually, because at the time Dan and I had quite different views on kind of the path we wanted to follow in property. Dan had just done a property course with his mate and was quite interested in the rent vesting kind of area. I didn't know much about property at all then. I was pretty keen on buying something to live in, and I was keen on the whole renovation thing. So I think, Dan ended up rolling over there. And
yeah, I actually had an offer on a property in Tasmania fall short by about $5,000. And then the next week we had this opportunity in Bomb Beach come up, and I was, we were investing into an owner-occupier which needed a full renovation. And anybody that knows me, I'm not very good with my hands or very practical. So, that was a hard year or so doing a lot of the laboursome tasks.
Lots of love jobs from his footy club there. They knew Dan needed a bit of help. But, and my brother's a carpenter and Dan's best mate's a chippy as well. So we had, plenty of help. But it actually worked out quite well because, we generated a lot of equity in our place, and we've since been buying investment property. So Dan eventually got what he wanted to. So we've kind of both
one. Yeah.
Yeah, cool. So how old were you both when you bought that house in 2000 or the unit in 2017?
Gosh, I think I was 27.
I would have been 28, I think.
Oh, yeah. 29. You're a bit older than me.
Yeah.
Dan's trying to, gain a few years.
Not worry about the numbers.
Okay, so for 19-year-old, 20-year-old stressing about not being able to get into the property market, you guys were 27, 28, so just take a chill pill, and it's not all bad if you can't get in this year or before Christmas, right?
Absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah, we did a lot of travel before we got into the property market. Yeah. So, we both came back from London a couple of years before we bought that first property with no dollars to our name. So, we managed to, save pretty hard and leverage off the asset that I had already to be able to get into Bomb Beach. So,
okay. And have you still got that asset that you bought JV with your mum?
No.
Just a question there, because I think you made a very valid point that you both went travelling and you came back with nothing basically and started from scratch, which a lot of people do, particularly I think a lot of people will do now that we can travel again. That's where the money's sort of funneling to experiences and see the world. What sort of sacrifices did you have to make during that time to be able to speed up your savings? Obviously, you did have the joint venture going on and maybe some equity in that, or sale proceeds or whatever it might have been. But outside of that, how did you go about saving cash? Did you have weekly goals together, or what was the approach to saving to then springboard into that first property together?
Well, I think the main thing was that we moved in with my parents again. Like, we did a year, the whole year overseas, traveling everywhere from America to Europe to Africa, lived in London for 6 months. And then we came back and, moved back in with the parents. We told them, look, we don't want to be here for long. The plan is that we want to get into our own place. So started saving pretty hard then. I sacrificed on my car. If anyone who knows me will know that my car was the most hideous thing ever. I just was like, I need something to get me to work and back. I have no money to my name, so I think I spent about $2,000 on my car and probably had it for far too long.
And I bought the little female mobile as much to laughter at the footy club.
So you've free vested and bought shit cars, basically.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, that's the trick,
good
guys.
Summary.
If you can't save any money, that's the two top tips for you.
Exactly. So, we did make some sacrifices there and, we just, saved pretty hard, and we were lucky that this property kind of came up. It was through family. There was my auntie was 90 years old and going to a nursing home, and she knew that we were kind of looking, and she's a property investor herself and has done quite well out of it. And she goes, look, even if you don't live in it, it's a good investment opportunity. So, if you're interested. So we bought all that off market, got a couple of valuations done, and, that's where it started.
Okay, so tell us about that acquisition. Like, it was off market because it was your auntie, but did you think you got a bargain? Like, did you get a deal for it, or did you think you paid fair market odds for it?
Oh, this is a controversial one. Dan, you go.
Yeah, I reckon we paid probably a little bit over.
Oh, my gosh. So for those looking at off-market properties, you're not always going to get a bargain.
Well, I think the learnings that we took out of that is you probably don't go with the valuations from the real estate agent, and you want to go with something from a bank, because the real estate agents are always going to put a little bit of fat on that to be able to secure that deal, whereas a bank will, this is what we'll lend based on the value of this property.
The bank did come in at that evaluation, but at the time we didn't know much. So my auntie's also a very clever lady herself, so she wasn't going to sell it to us cheap. It was also, like, from her point of view, it was her husband's side of the family, so obviously they all wanted it to be a fair deal. It wasn't going to be anything cheap, but at the time the property market was hot. We probably feel like, looking back, maybe we should have
negotiated a bit cheaper. A little bit harder, but that's sort of a challenge you can run into with family, because you don't want to muddy the waters too much, and it's not as much of a business transaction.
Yeah. So for the listeners, they didn't get a bargain on the way in just because they bought it off a family member. They actually paid 2021 prices, even though they bought it in 2017.
It wasn't that bad. We probably just could have got it a little bit cheaper. We're probably being really, like,
Okay. Sweet. And that's interesting. Like a client came to me this week and said, oh, John, I just got a sales appraisal on my house. It's $950. And I said, look, if you can get it sold for $950, you'd almost sell it now because I think that's $100 over what it's worth. Like that's what real estate agents are like, aren't they? And shout out to all the real estate agents around the country. We love you. And your job is to sell houses, which is awesome. But yeah, great learning curve, isn't it, to understand the difference between a valuation, an independent valuation, and indeed sales appraisals from agents.
Definitely. And I think it worked out okay for us because it needed so much work. Like if we didn't have friends that helped us out, it probably would have blown out a lot more. But because we're able to do the renovation on the cheap through lots of, you know, favors and hard work out, like we chipped in and did it most of it ourselves as well, it didn't work out too bad in the end. But it could have, yeah, it could have really blown out if we had to spend $60,000 on the renovation.
What were the key things that you did for the reno, like straight off the bat? Because, I mean, obviously sometimes places, the term livable is very different to everybody. Was the property livable or did you have to do a fair bit before you actually moved in?
Well, yeah, I had emerald green carpet and 1970s glass pane doors and, yeah, there were just walls and hallways everywhere. Never seen anything like it. So.
Four different entry points to get into the kitchen in terms of like a door in a two-bedroom unit. It was just
too many doors.
Weird.
I was going to say, it's only two bedrooms.
Yeah. So it was livable. Like you could have lived in it, but it was ugly. So so the main things we did were, flooring, painting. We knocked two walls out to open up the kitchen and living space. We left the bathroom because she'd actually recently done the bathroom a little while ago because she was an older lady and had to make the shower big and that sort of thing. So it wasn't old and gross, but it wasn't obviously our style, but we also didn't want to overcapitalize either because we knew that we'd probably keep this as an investment property down the track. So we've put up with the bathroom, and after we've been living in here for a while, like we're glad we didn't because we love the shower and
the deck in the backyard as well. Kitchen. Basically everything except the bathroom was redone.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay.
So one more question before we break. Daniel, you did a property course early on in your life, I suppose, adulthood. Was the view to buy this owner-occupier to propel you to investment properties? And did you indeed do the reno not just because it was ugly but because you wanted to create some equity to go and do investments? Was that the key?
A bit of both. So I had to obviously work with Shay. Like I wanted to rent there. Shay wanted to have an owner-occupier only. So we sort of met in the middle, got the property in, knew by putting the money into it, getting that capital return from doing the renovation that the next step would be investment property and then go again and, again. So, it's been a good facilitator for the next steps.
Yeah, great. All right, doesn't sound as though you met in the middle. Shay got what she wanted. She got it the owner rock. But anyway, let's take a break and we'll come back after it.
If you're after personal financial advice, don't get it from a podcast. If you would like help based on your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com, click get help, and we'd be happy to introduce you to one of our trusted advisors. We also have a panel of trusted mortgage brokers we can connect you with to get you into your first home, an investment property purchase, or to review your current loan if you don't have a broker. Our panel of advisors, mortgage brokers, and accountants work with clients all over Australia so they can connect with you wherever you are. That's sortyourmoneyout.com and click get help.
Let's, Emily, talk about this wonderful investment journey they've gone on since they did the renovation at Bond Beach and pulled some equity out, and talk to us about that next step.
Yeah. So first we went to our broker, saw what our capacity would be based on the equity position that we had, set up a list of buying rules. So sort of a price bracket, what we wanted to get out of the property in terms of rental yield. We want to make sure that our lifestyle wasn't affected too much. So we wanted to obviously achieve capital growth, but not be too much out of pocket at the end of the day. So the way we go about it is we buy a heap of reports and then sort of go through, find out where the infrastructure spend is in certain locations that actually fit that criteria. And then I did that property course with my best mate, Mitch, so I always sort of validate with him. We go through it together. And then, it's about calling the real estate agents, getting a feel for, you know, what's desirable in the area in terms of bedrooms, what rents well. And yeah, then from there, it's about trying to find properties by having those conversations with the property managers and the real estate agents before. You know, in a hot market, we're able to find out about deals before they actually get onto the market. So with West Wodonga, which is where we bought our first investment property, we were able to find out about that before it went on market, and we had an offer in 2 days of it being on market. So she actually said she could have sold it 4 times over. So the fact that we were able to get that offer in early doors probably helped us secure that property.
So it sounds like you've spent a fair bit of time in actually getting to the point of having the right knowledge, knowing you've pinpointed an area, you've gone and contacted the agents and the property managers, which I imagine is labour intensive, but I also imagine you must have really enjoyed it if you went to those extents to get the outcome that you wanted. Is this something that you sort of really enjoyed going through, that process?
Yeah, well, we actually drove down to Wodonga a couple of times as well. So we went through an open home and actually missed out the first time. And then we started developing those relationships with the agents because we had been putting offers in properties and, yeah, we enjoyed driving around the area and sussing it out. Like, we definitely found West Wodonga to be the nicest area to drive through, had a lot of green space. So, yeah, we definitely enjoyed the whole process. I mean, Dan was excited. Like, as he said, him and Mitch talk property once a week because Mitch is quite a successful property investor himself. So this is like right up his alley. So yeah, we've loved it.
But then COVID hit and you weren't able to have boots on the ground going through houses all the time. So those relationships and those conversations that you're having with people who actually live in that area sort of give you a lot more confidence of where you're investing, and you're actually investing in the right type of property. So.
And it was good that we did chat to the agents, because at the end of the day, we're in lockdown when we bought our first property. So we actually went sight unseen. So because we knew her and trusted her and had built this relationship, she videoed the property, gave us heaps of information on it. We felt quite comfortable in doing that because we didn't have any other choice. We're in lockdown, and we've been in lockdown for so long in Melbourne that we're like, we're not going to wait till we come out of lockdown, because who knows when that's going to be. And the property market's just still going up. So, we just took a gamble anyway. It's been a good investment so far. So.
Have you viewed the property since lockdown?
Yeah, so we actually were allowed to go and do our final inspection. We called the COVID hotline and double-checked that we would be able to go and view the property, and that was actually allowed because it was our property purchase. So we went down and viewed it on the final inspection and, hoping we liked it because we'd already bought it.
Yeah, it settled in 2 days.
Yeah. we're really happy with it. We got a lot of detail off the agent anyway, and we had it valued last week actually because it'd been a year and we had to refix our loan with our broker, and it's gone up 18% in the last 12 months. So yeah, it's done pretty well, and I think got a rental yield of 6% gross yield, so it's definitely helping with the cash flow
as well. It pays for itself.
Yeah, so it's been good.
It's good property.
So for those listening, Wodonga, or West Wodonga, is on the border of New South Wales and Victoria. Albury's on the other side. So you kept it in state. So now you've got two properties in Victoria. One bought in 2017, did a reno, pulled some equity out. 2020 in COVID, we've bought an investment property with a 6% gross yield. So that's our rent times 52 divided by our purchase price gives us a 6% gross yield, which is impressive. What type of dwelling was that? Has it got add value potential? What's the story on that?
Nah, so it's pretty much low maintenance. 3-bedroom, 1-bathroom, 500 and something squares in a nice court. So, yeah, we didn't really want anything that we're going to add value to because, as Dan mentioned before, like we're not tradies. We just wanted something that was just going to take care of itself, especially because it's a fair way away as well, or from us anyway, it's 4 hours away. So
there is an opportunity to do cosmetics, but we thought, let's see how the property performs first and foremost. And then if, it starts to stagnate for a little bit and we need to try and, push it again, then, we can do some minor cosmetics to get that little bit of a push.
Yeah. But it was mainly on the area. That's all basically on getting our growth was from the growth indicators in the area.
And was it easy to rent out, and has your experience with the tenant been positive for the time that you've held the property?
Yeah. So our property manager is awesome there. And I think we had it between settlement and having somebody go in there was a week. So it's a really hot market. And we achieved, well, the rent that he advised was roughly $350. And we said, oh, look, because of COVID and whatnot, and there's a lack of supply in the area, can we go a bit higher? And he goes, oh, yeah, we'll see. But yeah, we're able to secure that higher rent to start with. And we're not going to pass on an increase to the tenant because she's been a great tenant thus far. So yeah, we sort of secured the higher rent at the start so we could have a bit more flexibility moving forward.
Awesome. So you weren't going to rest on your laurels there. You thought, nah, look, we've got maybe a little bit more equity in Bond Beach. So you were smart enough to get another valuation post that purchase, I imagine. And 2021, which is this year, you made another purchase. So talk to us about how that all played out. Cash, equity, borrowing capacity, what was the strategy there?
Yeah, so We renovated the laundry in our unit in Bond Beach again. So we kind of had the renovation a bit staggered, which helped us with our two valuations. We'd also done some improvements to like the communal driveway of the property. So we, and the market was continuing to fly. And there was a couple of sales in our street, which had been quite good. So we thought, oh, why not? Let's just get another valuation done. It really is no effort to get a valuation done. Let's just see where we're at. And yeah, the valuation came in very favorably again. I think it was another, it had gone up 90K since our valuation the year before. So yeah, we thought, why not like cash out while we can, cash the equity out. And yeah, then we thought, okay, let's start looking. And this next investment property, I happened to be off work in the process of going through the process with our broker and getting our pre-approval sorted. And then I was on a run with a friend and broke my ankle. So I was in a moon boot for 7 weeks. And I thought, perfect, I'm off work. Let's do some property research and try and secure this next property. And Daniel was always the one who took care of this stuff. But I said to him, like, I need to learn and I want to take, you know, the lead in this one so I can deal with the agent and have that practice. So, yeah, I was listening because I was off work. I listened to one of John's webinars on a Wednesday afternoon. I think it was buying in a hot market. And at the end, he had a bit of a discount on this, his property calculator, which I had heard him talk about with Glenn in a podcast ages ago. He was just saying how it basically gives you all the numbers in terms of, you know, if it's going to be cash flow positive, how much of a buffer will you need, if it's more negatively geared, you know, when you can expect to, or how the property will expect to perform and when you can redraw equity out.
Depreciation as well. Yeah.
So I loved the sound of it. So I bought the calculator after that webinar and spent probably, yeah, the next day just absorbed in it, entering all our own details. And I thought this is going to be awesome when we're trying to buy our next property, which we're in the process of anyway.
So, Daniel, what did you think of that purchase? Like, you're the property guy. You've done the property course. It's like, Dale, we don't need this external thing.
No, like seeing the numbers. It gave us a lot more comfort when you were able to see every, like, drill down what you would get for rent, how it works after tax, you know, what your final position is, growth projections, targets, all of this. So all I could see is, you know, you have like an indicative way how things are going to get to and what your next steps are going to be. Whereas I look at this and I'm like, oh, wow, year two, we're going again.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like, so. It was really exciting for me just to be able to see the projections of our properties if they perform based on the forecasts that we sort of predict.
The thing that really took me back was when you messaged me and said it gave us the data/confidence to challenge our accountant when she gave us crappy advice around structuring the asset. Right. Now that is has hit the accountant in the eyeballs. What that is a learning curve to say, understand who's in your corner, isn't it, Emily?
I think the biggest thing is being able to be empowered with your own education going into a professional services meeting in any way, shape or form, a planner, an accountant, a broker, not doing their work for them because that's what they're there for, but having a baseline level of knowledge and understanding of what's in your best interest, which obviously in this situation, the calculator had helped articulate that for you, is a very empowering thing, I imagine. Like, how did you guys feel when that sort of unfolded, that meeting?
Yeah, so the thing was we were trying out this accountant. We'd spoken to her about 3 months earlier just to see if the relationship was going to work, told her that we'd probably be looking for another investment property in the near future and would she be able to give us some advice around how we'd structure the asset. And she was okay. And then when it came up and we're looking at putting an offer in on this place because we loved what it was looking like on the calculator, the beauty of it is you can send the summary of what it's going to look like over the next 20 years to the accountant. And the way it was positioned on the calculator was that it was positive cash flow pre-tax, but then because of the depreciation on the property, it actually was at a loss afterwards. So Dan's obviously earns a much higher income than I do. So we were kind of asking her, all right, well, if it's a $5,000 write-off at the end of the year, should we put it in my name or Dan's name, knowing that we're planning a family soon and I'm going to be the lower income earner? And she said, oh, I actually put it in your name, Shay. And I was kind of looking at the numbers being like, that just doesn't sound right to me. So, yeah, then we ended up calling John. I was like, am I interpreting this wrong? Like, maybe I'm not understanding what she's saying. And then we thrashed it out with John. And John was like, yeah, like, if anything, maybe you should be putting it in Dan's name, not your name.
But I'm no accountant.
Yeah, not an accountant. And I wasn't going to John for solicited advice. It was more just I called John and saying, can I just ask a few questions about the calculator? Because this is what our accountant's telling us. And I don't know if it's right. Anyway, thank gosh we didn't go down that track with her because we've since got a better, like a good accountant that we're really happy with, thanks to John's recommendation. And, yeah, we've ended up going 50-50 because even though it's a $5,000 write-off at the end of the year, he basically said that if you ever want to sell the property down the track, and John said this as well when we met up with him, that from a capital gains perspective, you don't want it all in Dan's name because he's a higher income earner and you're going to get taxed a lot more on the way out. So anyway, having the data here, yeah, that's just like, otherwise we would have just listened to her probably. If I didn't have that information in front of me, you just trust the experts and we probably would have structured the asset wrong and been stuck with that forever. So
what does that purchase look like? Where was it? What was the purchase price? What's the yield, et cetera?
Oh, I've got the calculator in front of me so I can tell you. So the purchase price was $435,000. It's in North Adelaide. We wanted to go a bit closer to a capital city next time and we already had two properties in Victoria, so we had land tax in mind. The gross rental yield is 5.2% first year. So we're always like our strategy is to try and keep it above 5 gross rental yield where we can because cash flow is important to us, particularly because we're coming into this family planning stage of life or season of life and we know that the household income might fluctuate, so we're really looking for properties that are going to stand up on their own and help us from a cash flow point of view anyway. And yeah, so the purchase price of that, rental yield of 5.2%, pre-tax cash position of $4,000 per year, and then because of the depreciation it actually is a loss of nearly $5,000 per year. So with the tax refund we're at a cash flow position of $6,174 in the plus each year, which is awesome. It's a perfect storm, really. It generates us cash flow all year, but then we can also write it off at tax time and get more money back. So, again, with Dan taking a new job recently and getting a pay rise, like, that's perfect because we're aware of if we're going this positive cash flow path that we don't want to be adding too much onto his tax return either in terms of more income, if that makes sense.
I think that's the biggest power of that calculator is being able to look at multiple properties and the outcome of, you know, if we choose A, B or C, what do things look like for us? And I'm sure there's plenty of listeners who may not know this calculator even exists. I mean, you should if you've been listening to the podcast for a long time, but if you don't, there definitely will be a link in the show notes to John's property calculator so that you can take advantage of that as well and just have those case scenarios and information that you really need to make an informed decision.
That's awesome, guys. Yeah, you've played it well. Daniel, what I'm hearing is you've given Shay what she wanted early days and now you've gone on the investment journey and Shay's actually taken over. She's that excited by it. So you're two highly motivated individuals. You've bought high-yielding property, which is going to bode well when you're getting married and having kids and maybe one income, one and a half income. So well done on the strategy play there. Thanks for the shameless plug around the analyzer calculator. That was really appreciated. But yeah, it'll be in the show notes. It's for Mac users now. It previously wasn't, but now it is. I've gone and spent $100,000 designing it. No, not that much, but just a few Mac users. Really appreciate you guys coming on the show today and sharing your story, because, Emily, it just gives inspiration to everyone else out there, not to compare, but just to give motivation and inspiration.
Most definitely. I think that's probably the biggest thing, is actually hearing stories of the community that, you know, this is possible. I think of late there's definitely been a bit of negativity towards the possibility of home ownership and just property in general, and so a story like this is really helpful for those who are in a similar position or thinking about, you know, investing in property and owning their own home. So thank you so much for being willing to share your story as well. We're really grateful for you to come onto the show.
Thanks for tuning in, everyone.
Have a great week ahead. As always, feel free to put questions in the Facebook group or reach out via Instagram, and we'll speak to you next week.
Okay, bye.
We acknowledge the Darkin Young people, traditional custodians of the land on which our studio sits, and pay respect to their elders, past and present. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to our podcast.
Taking your property journey to the next level starts with education.
That's why we make this podcast, but we've also created online courses to equip you with the knowledge you need to take the next steps.
I've created the Solvair Online Academy, open to both first home buyers and seasoned investors, where I share my tips and experience from 20 years in the property space.
And I've created the Buying Coach, built from my experience as a buyer's advocate, to demystify the confusion around purchasing property, particularly for first home buyers.
Follow the links in the show notes to sign up and get started today.
This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Symo Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, is an authorised representative of Money Sherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451289.